Speaking at the 2013 London and South East Day Conference, Dr. Sunil Raheja, consultant psychiatrist, reflects on the principles underlying success and failure in his own and others' experience.
It's a great pleasure now to introduce our second speaker for today, Dr. Sunil Raheja. Sunil's a consultant psychiatrist in Hounslow, student and teacher of people and organizations, a leadership coach and blogger at drsunil.com. Quick plug. Sunil and his wife Sally, a former GP who's with us today, host and lead a local CMF group in Southall with their family of four great kids and a massive and slightly savage rabbit. Very bravely, Sunil's brought Sally here today, except she tells me she's the brave one. So Sunil, over to you.
Yeah, actually, that's true, actually. She is the brave one. Yes, that is very true. Yeah, well, thank you.
Am I on?
You're on. Yeah, so thank you. It's a great privilege to be here. I also realise I'm the only one standing between you and lunch, but I hope the interest will keep your interest. And thank you again, Roland, for a fascinating talk. And as I hope you'll see as we go on, I'll try and build on what Roland shared earlier on. When Julian asked me to talk about this, it was sort of personal testimony, and we discussed it. So this is personal testimony and principles learned over the years. So cramming 48 years into 30 minutes, hopefully there'll be some wisdom that you can glean and you can learn from the mistakes and failures that I made, and hopefully that can save you some heartache as well. And I also think, Julian mentioned this as well, we're a small group, so please, you know, if we feel free to interrupt, we have got the time to, we're going to have some time for discussion at the end, but feel free to interrupt me for questions, clarifications, even objections. And I mean, ideally, it'd be great if this can be a dialogue, and I'll try and repeat your question so that for the sound system as well. As you heard, yeah, I'm married to Sally. We have four children. I came to Christ from beginning my second year at medical school in Southampton from an Indian Hindu background, struggling through issues of identity, depression, feeling of general emptiness. The only exams I passed first time were finals. Everything else was a major struggle. So that's a little bit of my past. Again, just building from what Roland talked, this is my canvas, okay, from Leaf by Niggle, okay? This is the canvas that I'm trying to build on. So I work as a psychiatrist in the NHS and privately. The private practice arose because I made some terrible financial decisions that meant I lost a lot of money, which meant I had to find another income source. And by God's grace, he provided it. And so now I find myself with both an NHS and private income. And then I found, well, you know, this issue about what do you want to be when you grow up? I'm still trying to work it out. So although my official title is I'm a consultant psychiatrist in NHS and privately, I'm still trying to grow up and work it out what it is I want to do. So the blog, the canvas, is part of that, where I write about the areas of biblical spirituality, mental health, especially depression. I mean, it was something that I struggled with growing up in my own life, the depressive feelings, negativity. My wife's long suffering in terms of helping me with that. But also, I'm aware it's not just me, actually, it's a huge issue in society and something about society today and modern life that is very depressogenic. Then the whole area of leadership, thinking, and cross-cultural issues. So excuse the plug, but why not? I mean, I've got the stand here. So there is a short ebook on dealing with depression and negativity in modern life with the, it's just on the side, with the ebook as well. So what we're going to look at, again, building on Roland's talk, this is going to be, as I said, partly testimonial, but also the principles that I've learned along the way. So areas we're going to explore, what exactly do we mean by success? What is success and who gets to say what it is? And having defined what success is and what it isn't, how do I get success? And then how do I handle apparent failure? So that's sort of what is it, what is it not? How do I get it, okay? And how do I handle, as Roland, you know, talked, where does failure come into that? I haven't got a slide, but biblical principles on this, okay? And I think all of us here, you know, have a walk with the Lord for various lengths of time. Just some verses just to throw out. Mark chapter 8, verse 36. what is it if a man gains the whole world and loses his soul? What is it if a man gains all the success this world has to offer and his soul is not there? Then with him, then so what? Big biblical principle. Scripture, the Bible tells me I'm already a success because of Christ's completed work on the cross. Because of what Jesus has done, God can look at me and say, you are my beloved son with whom I'm well pleased. So I have success already in Christ. And then Ephesians 2:10, we are God's workmanship created in Christ Jesus to do good work which he has prepared in advance for us to do. So there is successful work he's prepared in advance for us to do. And then Matthew 25, from the parable of the talents, what we all want to hear on that last day when we face him face to face, we want to hear those words, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been a success. That's what we want to hear. Now, easy to say, easy to study. And again, as Roland said, you know, it's not purely cerebral, okay? Even with a C or an S, it's not just cerebral. This is going to take a lifetime to work through. Now, two principles, okay, coming out of the Bible, which I've sort of, in a sense, are my disclaimers, if you like. First of all, Isaac Newton, in talking about standing on the shoulders of giants, he says, if I'm able to see further than them, that's everybody else, it's because of being able to stand on their shoulders, on the giant's shoulders, and not because of anything about me. And I don't come here saying that I'm some expert in any way, but by God's grace, I've picked things up on the way, I've read around, I've learned from other people, and so that's what I share with you. And what I'm encouraging you to do is to come with me to stand on some giant's shoulders, because as George Bernard Shaw says, I'm not a teacher, only a fellow traveller of whom you ask the way. I pointed the way ahead of myself as well as you. So I'm struggling with these issues, and I continue to struggle with these issues as anybody else, but come on the journey with me as we look at success and failure. So, testimony, my personal journey, okay? Now, obviously, I've not changed much since then. But that's me, my mum and dad, and my grandmother, leaving India in 1968 when I was 2.5. And I'm only here, in a sense, because of the sacrifices that my parents made. They came for a better life over here. They made a huge sacrifice. I mean, I can't remember exactly how old I was, but I can vividly remember the time. I was maybe 8 or 9, and my mother sat me down and she said, "Your dad and I have talked about things, and we don't like living here." I knew she hated living in England, the weather and away from family, but we've decided that we're going to stay here for the sake of you and your brother. So don't mess up. No pressure, okay? Basically, that was the gist of the conversation, okay? Don't bring dishonor on your family. Make something of your life, okay? No pressure, okay? The other sort of big thing was my dad, okay? My dad had this story. You know, again, we have some people from... Are you from Hong Kong or Singapore? Malaysia, Singapore, okay? Same thing. Big thing. Education, education, education. That's the big mantra. And my dad was very, very strong about you got to work hard, you got to study hard. And he used to tell me this story that he used to scare the life out of me. He would say, son, when you sit down to take that test, when you sit down to take that exam, just remember, every minute of how have you spent your day, your week, your month, your life will have to be given account for when you sit down in that test. And he used to scare the life out of me. It was really the whole fear of exams. And that's what he would say to me. Now, in God's providence, I realized when I came to Christ, actually, that was good preparation, because there is a day coming when I will have to give an, as every one of us will, of every second, of every minute, of every hour, of every day. And by God's providence, God used that to save me from a number of very overt sins. I mean, there's lots of other sins in me, pride and arrogance and all that, but a lot of external sins he used to protect me from. So those were some, formative features, So this idea of success and being successful in your life goes back a long way. And then, obviously, the apparent success of getting to medical school, and as I told you, it appeared to be a success, but it was a huge failure because I failed every single exam going along. But God used it to bring me to faith in Him. And then, you know, you get that success, as I think there's one or two medical students here, but you know, you finally get the success of having doctor after your name. But then you then realize that you climb one ladder and you appear to get to the top of one ladder, somebody's laugh, and you're at the bottom of another ladder, okay? That success seems fairly short-lived. And you got other exams to pass, and then you've got to become a consultant, and then you realize that there's a whole lot of stuff that you don't know. So that's one thing. Then the other thing is what, you know, again, with this whole issue about success and from the world, the attraction of what I call bright, shiny objects, all the things that money can buy and material success. And that, you know, that sort of manifests itself in all sorts of ways. I mean, she'll smile when I say it to her, but my wife Sally knows this, that I'm sort of an addict for books and learning and personal growth and courses, far more than I've read or devoured. And I think that's sort of temptation for me in that direction at times. So those are some initial thoughts on that. But one of the other key principles is that, as I say, when you get to the top of one ladder, you realize that you're at the bottom of another. And success and expertise in one area does not necessarily transfer across to other areas. And that's even more the case in our increasingly complex world with exponential increase in knowledge in every area. And then if you think about the sort of 24/7 connectivity that we have through the internet. And so there's no one who has all the answers. There's no one who knows the way through. But we thank the Lord that we have the living God. We have that relationship with Christ to help us to build, as Roland was saying, that intimacy with Him vertically, but also horizontally as well in the relationships we have, in the tasks that He gives us to do. Let me talk about success now then from a career perspective. I don't know, did you know who this guy is? I don't know if any of you have come across him. He's an American psychologist who I found enormously helpful. A guy called Henry Cloud, American Christian psychologist. And he very helpfully says, if you want to think about success from a career perspective, you can actually boil it down to three very simple things. And the first is technical ability. Or another way, you need to know your area of expertise exceedingly well. So if you're a brain surgeon, that means you've got to know how the brain works, okay? Quite simply, you've got to know your neuroanatomy, your neurophysiology, your neurotransmitters, the whole nervous system, you know, that's for starters. Or, you know, or if you're a musician, you've got to know a lot about music and singing and all that sort of stuff. And the point being is, you cannot fake those skills. You have to learn them, you have to put in the hours, you have to be very good at what you do. And if you like, that's where the emphasis has been the world over with education. But the problem is that in our growingly complex world, technical expertise in whatever way you want to, whatever area, is not enough. So, you know, if we take the example of the brain surgeon, he or she needs a whole team around them. They need nurses, they need anesthetists, they need administrators, they need cleaning staff. Or if you want to take a musician, they can't just be a great singer or a great player of an instrument. You know, they've got to know how to pull in the other resources. I mean, you know, as a case in point, if you take some of the major singers in the world, you know, if you take some of the major cities of the world, if you take London or New York, sometimes the people who are busking, if you're a musician, not that I am, but if you're a musician, some of them may well be better than you are, you know. And they're busking, and you're thinking you want to make a career in it. So technical skills per se are not enough. The other one, the next thing he builds on, is this area of people skills. And Cloud describes this in terms of being an alliance builder. Another way of saying that, you have to take what you do well and build alliances with those who have skills and resources that complement your own so that you can form beneficial relationships, mutually beneficial relationships. Now, in the past, this has been ignored. You see, what's happened is that what we've done is that we've just had good intentions. And we assume that good intentions will win the day. Now, I was in church leadership for about 10 years. And to be quite honest with you, when I look back, one of the big mistakes that we made as a leadership team was we assumed that, you know, this thing is that I believe in Jesus, you believe in Jesus, I love Jesus, you love Jesus, okay? We all love Jesus. Therefore, let's get going and we will achieve and we will reach our goals, we will do the things we need to do. And it doesn't work. And that's in a Christian context, let alone any other context. Good intentions are never enough. There are skills that are available that can enable us to work better together. Just relying on good intentions will not get us there. And some people naturally and intuitively have good people skills. But fortunately for the rest of us, those people skills can be learned. And the other name for it is leadership, leadership skills. That's why I'm very, very passionate about the whole area of leadership, because it's what enables us, as it were, to move to the next level. Colin Powell, who is Secretary of State in America, says, leadership is about getting more out of people than the science of management says you can. So it's opening up doors that otherwise would never have opened. Possibilities can open up that you would never dream possible. But so technical skills, people skills, but even that is not enough. You see, you can have fantastic technical ability, fantastic people skills, but they could actually cause great harm and injury to individuals and society at large. I mean, classic examples of that would be terrorist organizations, would be organized crime, okay? They have very good technical skills, they've got very good people skills, but there's no moral framework within which to bring that. And that brings that to what Cloud calls the whole importance of character. Because character is what's going to hold you back from progressing further. And that's more than talent or ability, because it has to do with who you are as a person. Now, at the most basic level, when we talk about character, we talk about being honest, we talk about being ethical, we talk about being trustworthy. And it is that, okay? But it's actually much more than that as well. Because again, I'll just quote from Cloud. He says, who a person is will ultimately determine if their brains, talents, competencies, energies, efforts, deal-making abilities, and opportunities will succeed. Who you are as a person. So that's why you have people, as I think again, I think one of the speakers talked about earlier on, you can rise to a huge level of apparent success, and then the whole thing come crashing around you because of some character defect that you have. And it may be overtly, maybe some financial misdemeanor, maybe some moral breakdown, or it may just be that you reach a lid, you reach a limit as to how far your organization or the vision that you have for wanting to achieve can go because you can't go further. So, have I got this? I'm not sure if I got. Yeah. So how does that? So what that means is that you sort of hit a performance ceiling that is much lower than what you're capable of or passionate about. You've got a vision or a dream to do this, but you only get as far as here. You've got a vision for playing in the Olympics, but you only can, I don't know, reach a certain sort of, I don't know, you know, a very low level on that. Or you hit an obstacle or situation that takes you off track. Or you, as I said earlier, you achieve some apparent great success, but then you then go into self-destruct in some way. So that's why character is so fundamental as well. And again, largely ignored or assumed in the world around us. So again, character about being a whole and undivided person, being congruent with who you are on the outside and on the inside, being congruent with whoever you are and with whoever you are and wherever you are. But as I said, much more. This is much more than being honest, and much more than not lying and not cheating. And this is how Cloud further breaks it down. So he talks about the ability to create and maintain trust. Okay. Again, you can. And when I think about this, you know, there are some people who are very, very ethical, very honest, but there's something about your relationship with them that you just don't feel comfortable opening up to them, or if it's a work situation, working with them, because there's something that's not quite right in the way that the relationship goes. So that ability to create and maintain trust with others is a skill that can be developed. The ability to see and face reality. What normally happens, okay, what I struggle with is that I have my vision, dream, that I want to do something, and then I hit a brick wall in the real world. And what everything within me wants to say is run away and not face reality and carry on with my fantasy of what I would like to see happen. The ability to work in a way that actually bring results. And again, I think as Christians, it's very easy for us to over-spiritualize that. So you say, well, it's a difficult area, that's why we're not achieving the success that we want. And we over-spiritualize it. The ability to embrace negative reality and solve them. So we heard the example of the Honda story. I can't think of the guy's first name. Takira Honda. His ability to embrace reality that he kept on trying to build his factory and it kept on being bombed or being destroyed by earthquake. But the key thing is, character in this sense creates health. And anything that is healthy will grow and increase. Now, it may not grow and increase dramatically, but it will grow and increase in some way or other. And then he then talks about, and he's writing to a secular audience, but he talks about achieving transcendence and meaning in life. And what it all boils down to, in a sense, is that this issue, like, is the school of hard knocks. This is the school of life. And if you get to think about, you know, all of us, you know, having gone to medical school and postgraduate exams for many of us as well, is that in school, medical school or in education, you have the lesson and then you have the test. And if you pass the test, you then move on. But life does not work, and God does not work that way, okay? In life and in God's school, in God's university of life, you have the test. And until you learn the lesson from the test, you will not move on. You see it in people who, for example, will say, who will join a church, and they'll join the church and they'll say, you know, how fantastic everything is. But then within a year, they're upset with the leadership, or they're upset with people, and they move on to another church. And then they move on to another church after a few months. They're not learning the lesson. They're not passing the test, so they learn the lesson. So it's the other way around in life. And so that's, in a sense, is this point here, really. Success is a journey and not a destination. So, again, we will never arrive until we meet him face to face. And I think this is the lesson, in a sense. We think, okay, that when I succeed, you know, when I think about it, I just laugh about it. My own stupidity. When I went to medical school, you'll laugh when you hear this. I looked at it and I saw, okay, I've got into medical school. I've arrived, I've succeeded. And I looked at it, 120 people go in on day one, and 118, 119 come out at year five, okay? That means if I just coast, okay, I will come out at year five. I mean, the naivety of that. And I learned, as I tell you, the only exam I passed first time was finals, because I had to learn the hard way that was complete baloney. Because what I was thinking was, I have arrived. I've got into medical school. I have achieved. Whereas success in one area is preparation in God's economy, in God's life, in God's world, for further challenges. So that's why, you know, James says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds, for you know the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work in you so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. That is why God gives us success, if you like, so that he can use us for bigger challenges. Because, again, I think Julian's quote, the danger of success is that you get complacent and you just keep repeating what you've always done. And this is a sobering thing, you see. I'm only one step away from doing something really stupid, okay? No matter how much success I achieve in any terms, in worldly terms, in spiritual terms, you know, I just have to make one stupid mistake and that all will come crashing down. And that will always be the case until I die, because it all has to rely on my relationship with him. And that is not something I can take for granted, because it's all based on what Christ has done for me. And that's why, again, I said, that's why the danger of reaching a measure of success to only then go on to self-destruct because of some character flaw. So that's why success is a journey and not a destination. The other big issue, if you like, principle, is that success is an inside job. And that's why it's linked to character. You see, is there congruency between the outside and the inside? Now, I mentioned to you that I'm very interested in the whole area of leadership and personal development. And I don't know, have any of you come across a book called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey? A few of you have. I remember the time somebody talked to me about this in 1996. We were in India at the time, 1995 actually, we were in India at the time. And it's one of the top-selling business books in the world. Okay. It probably is, I think, the top-selling business book in the world. And it's used in corporations and multinationals all over the world. And it's literally, in many ways, it's become almost like a Bible for business executives around the world. But on about, I can't remember, it's about page 300 and something, this is what I came across, which just blew my mind. I think this is what is written in a book for corporate executives in secular companies all over the world. This is what written. He quotes at the beginning of one of the chapters. He says, "The Lord works from the inside out. The world works from the outside in. The world would take people out of the slums. Christ takes the slums out of people, and then they take themselves out of the slums. The world would mold men by changing their environment. Christ changes men, who then changes their environment. The world would shape human behavior, but Christ can change human nature." And I was thinking, goodness, this book has sold 20, 30 million copies all over the world and is used as a resource. It's amazing, you know, to have something overtly as overt as that. I mean, and even, you know, Stephen Covey himself is a Mormon, so obviously there's a lot of his theology that we wouldn't agree with. And yet it's amazing how God is working in all sorts of ways. So it's this inside-out approach that is so vital for true success. But having said that, and just building on that quote, with that in mind, one of the questions that I heard from a guy called Bill Hybels about four or five years ago that has always echoed in my mind, and I'll repeat the question to you for you just to reflect on. And the question was, is the way I'm doing the work of God destroying the work of God in me? I'll say it again. Is the way I'm doing the work of God destroying the work of God in me? And can you see, it's those two issues that we talked about with Roland earlier, between task and relationship. The good work that he's given me, that I sense he's given me to do, and my relationship with him, and my relationship with the loved ones around me. Because the danger is of being human doings rather than human beings, of focusing on activity per se. But before you do, you have to be. Activity has to follow identity. And I think one of the big temptations for us as doctors, as medics, is that our identity is wrapped up in who we are. Martin Lloyd-Jones has this, I don't know whether he said it tongue-in-cheek, but it's quite profound. What he said was that for most, and he's obviously talking about his time, but I can't believe it's changed now. He says, for many doctors, on their tombstone, it should be written, "Born a human being, died a doctor." Okay? And what he's getting is that for so many medics, their identity is tied up in the fact that they're a doctor, the fact that they have DR before their name and they have a long list of qualifications after their name. And that is very, very dangerous. And even more so if we go on to this issue about success being an inside job, because no amount of success in life will compensate for failure in the home. No matter what I achieve, no matter what I do, if my wife or my kids are severely upset with me and angry with me because of the choices that I've made, then everything else I achieve will be null and void. We go to All Souls Langham Place, and Rico Tice, who's the minister there, has a quote which I go back to. He says, "Failure is being successful at those things that do not ultimately matter. And that turns it around in its head. Failure is being successful at those things that in the long run don't really matter. And finally, my favorite definition of success, and again, I'm a long way from it, but this is what I'm working towards, is that those who know me the best love and respect me the most, and finishing well. This whole issue, if you think of a football match or any match in any sport, what the score is at half time is irrelevant to what the score is at the end of the game. And so no matter what amount of success, again, in material, spiritual terms, I may appear to have at the halfway mark, is all well and good, but it's how will I go out? How will I finish? Have you come across Gordon MacDonald, Resilient Life? He's wrote a book called Ordering Your Private World, but he's also written a book called The Resilient Life. And again, one of the things that he really challenged me about in that book was, he says, if you think of a marathon runner, the marathon runner aims to end the marathon with a sprint. And he says, if you then combine that with the picture in the Bible in the New Testament of a race that Paul talks about, we are in a race, but we're not racing against each other. So there's no comparison here. But there is a race that is marked out before us, as it says in the scriptures. And we run with perseverance that race with our eyes fixed on him. But the marathon runner aims to end that race with a sprint. So he says, this was a challenge, is that we should look at our lives as that marathon. Obviously, God can take our life at any moment. But for what I'm in control of, I pace my life so that my most productive years for him are in my 70s, my 80s, my 90s, if he gives that to me. And that's a wonderful way that turns the world's view of success on its head, that my most successful years are at the end, and that I go out, as it were, with a bang to meet him in glory. So with such an emphasis and pressure from both outside and inside, and we all have that, we're all in that high achieving category. That's why we got into medical school. That's why we're in the positions that we are. This high pressure to perform and succeed. It's important to be clear about what is it that we're responsible for and what we're not responsible for. And again, in thinking about success and thinking about goals, I found it really helpful to distinguish between what I call process goals and outcome goals. So process goals are those goals that I have control over, whereas outcome goals are those I don't have control over. So if you want to think of, again, if you want to think of a sports analogy, so if you think of, for example, take a tennis match, okay? In tennis, I don't know if any of you play tennis? I haven't played for years, but I can enjoy watching it. But a tennis player can make a decision that I'm going to go move forward to the net more times in the rally to try and hit more winners. Or I'm going to try and do more on my backhand. Or I'm going to try and hit more on my opponent's backhand because I know he or she's weak on that side. Or if you take football, for example, a team can say we're going to try and work more on our passing to each other and on getting the ball more into the opponent's half and into the opponent's box. Now, whether or not we score a goal or not, whether or not in tennis we score the winner or not, is really out of our control because it depends on how the opponent plays. But I will take responsibility, we will take responsibility for what we can. Those are the process goals. Because if we get into the opponent's box more often, there's more likelihood we'll score. If I get to the net more often, there's more possibility that I will hit a winner. So that's what I'm in control of. I choose to take control of what I can. What the outcome is another matter. So, because you cannot guarantee victory. That's why, in a sense, it's important that we have internally measurable goals. And so with that in mind, I was on a coaching program a few years ago, and the speaker there talked about this whole issue, and he talked about how you've got to be able to measure success for yourself in real time, because what's going on outside can go anyway. And again, Roland's been talking to us about that. External success is very, very fickle. So this was very helpful for me, and this is something that I keep going back to in my own life. See, I know how successful I am, and I'll give you each one, by how joyful I am for all that God has given me and done for me. And I know whether I'm joyful or not. My wife knows if I'm joyful or not. My kids know that, okay? Can I maintain such an intimacy with the Lord that my joy and satisfaction is found in Him? And again, you know, we've got, you know, scripture abounds with, you know, just take for example of Paul in prison in Philippi. And, you know, think about it, you know, if I was in prison in Philippi, I know what I would write about. I'd write about how bad the food is, how terrible the rats are there, how the, you know, how the believers need to pray for me to get out as fast as possible, okay? And what's the letter full of? Complete joy and thanksgiving for the goodness of God. So my life is a response to what He has already done. As I said at the beginning, I'm already a success. I'm a huge success because of what Jesus has done already. And is that where my true satisfaction is found? That's the first one. The second one is a challenge. How open and accessible I am to my wife and children. Now, there's a part that they have to play on that, but I can be responsible for my attitude towards those who are closest to me. Remember, it's a process goal. This is process. I can choose to be interested in my iPhone, in the next email, in a phone call coming in. I can choose to be interested, or I can be choose to be open to them. So I know by how open and accessible I am to them. I know how successful I am by how much I can see everything I do in terms of eternal value. I can take responsibility for the connection I make between what I do and who I am. You see, again, this turns everything in the world on its head. Because, you know, Jesus said even giving a cup of cold water in His name will not be forgotten. So I may be doing something that I feel is completely trivial and a complete waste of time, but how much can I see of that in terms of eternal value in the here and now? How much can I see that what appears to be a trivial thing, and my ego says you shouldn't be doing this, how much can I say, no, this is part of what He's called me to do at this moment in time? And the fourth one is how much am I able to enjoy and give in relationships and friendships? And again, this is such a challenge to all of us in our task-oriented world, because it's so easy to say, I'll only talk with you, I'll only be friends with you if I can get something out of you. I'll only contact you if I want something from you. If I don't want anything from you, then I won't. How much can I enjoy friendships for the sake of enjoying friendships as a goal in its own right? Not because I want something from you, not because I'm contacting you to get something out of you. How much can I just enjoy the God gift, the God-given gift of friendship? To enjoy people for who they are and not what I can get from them. That's how I know how successful I am. And so the success of my day is determined by the seeds I sow and not the harvest I reap. That's Robert Louis Stevenson. By the seeds that I sow. And I'm not keeping any score. I'm here. I already know I'm a success because of what Jesus has done for me. So as I come to a close, and we can open up for questions and thoughts. So the key question in life, this is from, I think it was called Rabbi Susir, but I've heard it in many different ways. It says, at the end of your life, God will not ask you, why were you not Moses? He will ask, why were you not you? Why did you try to live out somebody else's life that was not your own? And I said, you know, in a sense, we are, you know, His workmanship created in Christ Jesus, the good works that He's prepared. But His workmanship, His work of art, each of us with a unique set of experiences. And I think, you know, it's something about medical education at times that tries to fit us into a certain box. And yes, we need it for the technical ability, but we're much richer and fuller human beings than that. And there are certain people that only you can reach and no one else. There are certain things that only you can do and no one else. But I think, as Emerson said, take God seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. That's a key thing. And this last one, just want to yeah, just we come to, yeah. I love this in a sense, again, L. Emerson defining success. He says, to laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciating of honest criticism, to appreciate beauty and find the best in others, to know even one person's life has breathed easier because you have lived. And this is to have succeeded. So, and again, I love the sort of, it really fleshes out because in terms of who I am and hopefully what I do as well. But it has to flow from who I am. Because if it doesn't flow from who I am, then what I do will then be debased. So I said success is fundamentally an inside job. It's a journey, not a destination. This hopefully should make you smile. Let me see the next slide. We didn't discuss it, okay? Fundamentally, success is 100% effort and 100% grace. And the story of Leaf by Niggle, in many ways, I think, illustrates that, as Roland talked to us about. And again, we were discussing this just after his session, and we both came across it. He explained it much better than I would have, so I'm really glad that you'd explained it, Roland. So you haven't stolen my thunder at all. I'm really glad that you, because I haven't read the book. I have read a synopsis of the story in Tim Keller's book, which is Every Good Endeavor. Yeah, in the book Every Good Endeavor, he talks about this. And it's a book I was telling myself I need to read before today, and I never got around to it, so I failed in that area, but Roland succeeded, so that was good. But the point being, if we take that, is that it was 100% effort. You see, Niggle niggled away at his leaf, okay? He niggled away at it, okay? And all he produced was a leaf, and it was forgotten. And as I said to you, I'm niggling away, my avatar, I'm niggling away at this, okay? This is my little niggle, okay? And whether it grows and grows, we wonderful. But if it doesn't, it's fine, because it's what I feel is my work, if you like. But it's 100% grace as well, because he will take our small effort and he will make it into something wonderful and glorious for him. And as I said, even giving a cup of cold water will have eternal value in his kingdom. And whether he wants to choose it for a great work or for a small work, it's up to him. So those, I think, in a sense, yeah. And just in terms of close, and that's it. And as you said, I mean, I find this whole area fascinating. And, you know, we've had our sessions, not sessions, that's the wrong word, our CMF meetings on Thursday. It's usually Thursday nights. It's usually Thursday nights. And it's great to talk about this and to discuss, because hopefully we can help each other along in the journey. And the blog is, in a sense, is a means of carrying on that conversation and dialogue and thinking about how we can encourage each other on that journey. And that's just the I do tweet. And he says, well, what's the point of tweeting? But actually, I found tweeting is actually a very helpful way to get thoughts and ideas across as well. So if you do those things, it'd be wonderful to enjoy that with you as well. So thank you. Yeah.